Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 7.
7?
Of Podding on the Ritz.
7 episodes.
The theatrical, behind-the-scenes dressing room diary of Ross Noble and Hadley Fraser.
Although, sort of, is it a diary now? Because this episode, strictly speaking, even though this is, I've left the show now.
You have left the show. So we're talking from the future where you're not in the show anymore.
Yeah. But the episode, I'm still in the show.
Yeah.
So I left 4 days. So like my final show is on the 10th of February.
Yeah.
Which is already gone.
Yeah.
But I'm not. So
it's a bit like Terminator, isn't it?
Yes. I'm both in it and not in it.
Yeah.
At the same time.
You're like Sarah Connor who's.
Yeah.
So that's who Ross is.
So if you're listening to this and you're coming to see the show, I'm no longer in it.
Yeah.
But when we recorded this show,
which was on January the 12th, you were in the show.
Yes.
Yeah.
But today, if you're listening to this when it goes out,
which is Valentine's Day,
this is the perfect, you know what? This is the perfect thing for Valentine's Day. Say you're on a first date, right? You've had the dinner.
Yeah.
You go and see a show, right?
Perfect. Yep.
You have a nice dinner.
Yeah.
Come and see this show, which I'm no longer in.
Yeah.
Right? But it's fine.
Yeah.
So you listen to the podcast, like you enjoy the show, and you go, oh, that was good. I wonder what that was like.
To be a part of
when Ross was in it. But that's okay. You go back, till you snuggle up in bed together.
And listen to Podding on the Ritz.
Listen to Podding on the Ritz. It's your first date, so you don't want to go straight at it. But
it's like an aural time capsule.
Just hold each other and giggle.
Yeah.
Love is in the air.
Do you think you might be doing that?
No.
No. Today's on episode 7.
Yes.
Ross. On this episode, we talk about Banana Man. The musical.
Oh, yes.
And a slightly unexpected contribution from the audience. Talk about being on autopilot on stage.
Yeah, very candid.
Very candid.
Very candid.
Yeah. We have got a few questions from Twitter and things about some snow globes.
I'm excited already.
Actually, given that it's Valentine's Day, it's quite fitting that the musical of the week is On a Clear Day You Can See Forever.
Oh, of course it is.
Which is, it is about the rocky road of love here and there, I suppose. So
if you're in a couple, enjoy together. But if you're lonely, then allow us to be your date.
A threesome.
That's all good.
The pair that we cry for, the pair that we sigh for, the pair that we die for, is wrong.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Welcome to episode 7.
Is it 7 already?
7.
Good Lord.
I think a lot of people thought we wouldn't get this far.
That's true.
Both with the podcast and with Young Frankenstein, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Because we've both forgotten how many shows we've done.
Yeah. What are we thinking? 130?
Well, I think it's 130 officially.
But then we did 20 previews?
In Newcastle.
Yeah.
Is it weird when I say Newcastle rather than Newcastle?
No, I like it.
Does it sound like it makes sense?
If we were doing a Whatever Happened to Baker Grove 20, 30 years
Do you think they'd use me as the voiceover or not?
I think it would be weird. I think, put it this way, if you were on Geordie Shore.
Yeah.
And there was basically, I'd like to see an episode of Geordie Shore where there's a house basically full of like drunk Geordies. Just all having sex with each other.
Yeah.
And then there's one room in the house where you're there, listen to your jazz. just everyone else is like tashing on and that.
Yeah.
And then you're in.
What's tashing?
Tashing on. You know, getting into the.
I've never heard it called tashing before.
Have you never watched
it? Is that a Northeastern thing? Of course I've never watched Geordie Shore. What are you talking about?
You just revealed to me that you've never seen Love Actually or.
Geordie Shore, there's too much Horace Silver to listen to. Come on, Ross.
So you're in a room, like, but slightly annoyed by the sound of the sexuals going on.
Yeah.
And then there's just people, like.
Just ambivalent, I think. Just, not annoyed.
Oh, you're not annoyed that it's interfering with the jazz?
If it interferes with jazz, yeah.
Yeah. See, there you got a little cup of tea on there. Yeah. Maybe some of your luxury biscuits that you like from Marks and Spencer's.
Yeah, more chocolate than biscuit. That's the ratio.
Yeah. You've got your jazz. You're trying to listen to the jazz, but you can't hear the subtle brushwork on the snare.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean?
That's annoying.
And then you're a little bit annoyed, and then that's all happening around you.
Yeah.
And there's people just riddled with sexually transmitted music. And then you're playing with the jazz. They're trying to listen to the jazz and enjoy the biscuits. And then you go, you open the door, and you say, come on, you're giving Newcastle a bad name. I think that would
make the trailer.
That would jar. I think it would jar.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Speaking of ruckuses.
Go on.
Did you hear this week?
Ruckus news.
Ruckus news. Yeah. Well, even better than that, it's musical ruckus news.
Okay.
So down at the Southwark Playhouse, there is, which I'm sure you've heard of, Ross, there's Banana Man the musical happening right now.
What?
Have you not heard about this?
I have. One, I'm not hugely familiar with the Southwark Playhouse.
Fair dues.
It's not a venue that stand-up comedy is regularly.
How would we describe it? It's sort of off West End. I think it's about 200, 300 seats or something
that. Is that the one just along from the Old Vic?
No, that's the Young Vic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Southwark's moved. It used to be near Elephant and Castle. I can't remember where it is now.
Right.
But it's a sort of off West End sort of. They do some very interesting stuff there,
right?
And Banana Man the musical. So apparently, at one of the performances of Banana Man this week, one of the audience members got slightly tipsy and started throwing bananas. And it brought to mind you sat going to see Cats dressed as a dog.
Yeah.
And I wondered whether it was a listener of the podcast who's taken it just that bit too far.
Too far.
You know, it's a bid for fame. And she's gone, I know what will get me on the podcast if I go to Banana Man and throw bananas.
And what's that? Do you think at the point the bloke playing Banana Man, as he's getting hit with bananas, he's going, I told him it was a bad idea to sell these at merch. Are they selling them there or did people...
I don't think so. I think she... Maybe, though. Well, I think she only got as far as throwing two.
Right.
And I think the cast found it funny for about 5 seconds and then... I think she was quite drunk, so I think she started being a bit leery. Anyway, they got rid of her quite quickly. But
the question is, is she somebody who throws bananas, but then just it happened to be, it was serendipitous that the show, it was thematic.
Oh, I see what you mean. So she's gone to other musicals or like an art gallery or a concert and thrown bananas.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's interesting because bananas are the... I was thinking about this quite a lot the other day, right? Foods with...
You often think about food, though, don't you?
I do, yeah.
Usually Michelin starred.
That's right.
While you're looking at it before you eat it.
That is very true. But I was thinking about the fact that bananas are probably only the second most... the food second most associated with mental illness.
What's the first?
Nuts.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Nuts, bananas, crackers.
Yeah.
The three...
I wonder why that is. I wonder why they all became synonymous.
That's what I was thinking about.
Did you come up with an answer?
No, because then you gave me a line and I had to respond to it.
Anyway, so
in
banana...
In the middle of the show.
I was in the middle of the show. Mind you, I went on a bit of a reverie the other day.
Let's be honest, right? So I think we have to be honest with everyone that's listening.
What about the day in, day out nature of doing Young Frankenstein the musical?
Both of us have had this week. We've both had a little moment.
Yeah.
Because what was mine? Oh yes, that's right. I don't know if I told you about this because you're above my head, hanging from the ceiling.
Yeah. What happened
during the number Surprise?
Yeah.
Just before the song begins, there's a moment where I growl at Elizabeth, Frankenstein's fiance, and she turns around and goes, "What is that?" And then I won't give away what happens after that, but it's a hilarious visual joke.
Yeah.
I got to protect the throat.
Protect the throat.
Protect the throat.
You've had a bit of a sore one this week.
Bit of a sore throat. Yeah. And I was thinking to myself, how can I... You know, because I've got to growl like that 8 times a week. Yeah. I know there's no heavy lifting involved. I know I don't have to wear
but
hybrid,
you know.
But it's still...
wears down the old vocal folds, doesn't it?
And I'm thinking, right, I've got a growl here. And then I'm thinking, how can I growl, but at the same time protect the voice for when I then have to sing? Now, what happened was I thought about that a bit too much and realised that the moment of growling had passed.
So you achieved no growling.
No growling.
You preserved the voice, though,
I did preserve the voice, but at the moment where I'm supposed to go... And she goes, what is that? She turned around and went, what is that? Well, that is clearly a man who's doing nothing. That you've
lost in a distant reverie.
I had to apologise quite a lot. But then, which has made me laugh, I would say, more than anything else last week.
Was this mine?
Yeah.
This is a big sort of thing to admit to, I think.
Is this too much?
Well,
to put
I suppose
it
maybe
world?
Not. I mean, you know, after a bit of a run in a show, I think people would understand if you sort of went on a bit of a daydream in the middle of a scene.
I don't think that this shows you in a bad light.
Okay.
Because I think, if anything, this shows a level of professionalism. I don't think this is bad.
Really? You think this shows...
I think it shows...
a more concentrated level of professionalism.
I think so. I think it...
Well, I'll take that then.
So what happened was... There's one scene in the show where my character drops a brain and then has to explain to your character, the doctor, whose brain he brought instead of Hans Delbruck, the scholar and a saint... Yeah. One of the finest brains in the world that is supposed to be put in the monster. Instead, all goes wrong and I bring the wrong brain. The character brings the wrong brain.
Yeah, the character.
Character brings the wrong
brain. The caricature.
And I... How dare you? There is nothing but truth. So I turned to you and said... And I changed that scene around a lot because I'm always tinkering.
It's one of those scenes, isn't it, that we never feel like we've necessarily really got the...
It plays differently with different audiences.
Every night is different. But I don't think you and I have ever come off it going, we nailed it.
No.
Is that fair to say? Because some scenes I think we come off going, that was great.
Yeah.
We absolutely got that. That's one little scene. It's at the end of quite a big energetic lab scene.
Yeah.
And it's this little kind of scene at the end of this, and we're sat on chairs, so it's quite low energy almost.
Yeah.
And we come off going, I wasn't quite
But there's lots of
So we often analyse it afterwards.
Yes. And there's a real sort of sometimes there's points, it's tricky, isn't it? Because there's sort of there's laughs. There's one very definite laugh. But then some audiences laugh at the setup of one bit, but then
not so much at the...
So, they laugh at the set... Sometimes they laugh at the setup, but not as much at the joke. But then other audiences really go for the setup. Sort of go for, the punchline, but then the setup's kind of...
It's unpredictable, isn't it?
It's really... It's an interesting... And there's no... one particular way to everything else you sort of go, there's a setup, there's a punchline, but this is kind of so anyway, so I'm always tinkering about with it, always just trying different things, just to change the energy and all the rest of it. And I said, and it was possible, I thought it was the best we've ever done it, and I said to you, because I really thought I tried this different,
this was as we came off after the scene,
and we've got about a minute before we have to go back on for the end of act one. So the start of that, instead of taking my time into it, I went straight into that bit, and then that sort of works. And I was quite impressed about the way that I went for this, and I hadn't discussed this with you, and then you were reacting kind of matching what I was sort of going for in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, this is interesting. He's picking up on what I'm trying here. And then I said, what do you think? And you said...
I said, I wasn't aware of anything I was doing in that scene because I was thinking about whether I'd be able to go and watch a rugby match in the week of my holiday at the end of February. Because I realised I'd come off stage. And you know sometimes when you're driving on a motorway and you realise that you've been in a sort of daydream for 20 minutes and you go and you sort of come to a little bit. I realised that I'd had the sort of theatrical equivalent of that, but I'd been thinking about whether there was a Six Nations match on I think it is the 2nd or 3rd of March this year, and whether I'd be able to go to it.
Yeah.
I think that's quite something to admit, because that audience, well, they won't know, I suppose, which performance it is, sure. Will they?
No.
They wouldn't have known. You didn't know. But that's...
I had no idea.
I wasn't listening to a word that you were saying. I wasn't aware of anything that I could have been saying completely the wrong words.
But that's why I think that's the height of professionalism. Because it was...
Did I say the right words?
You said the right words.
At the right time.
At the right time. But not only that, it felt to me like you were listening to the... It felt to me like you'd gone...
Really on it.
Oh, this is what he's doing. Oh, I see. He's taking it in that direction.
I was thinking about
and
rugby.
And responded accordingly. But I have started doing... I don't know if you've... I mean, you have noticed, but there's an interesting... thing that I've started doing in one of the scenes. I think if anyone's coming to see the show, this isn't like it's not in the script, and it's also not necessarily what the director asked for. But
right,
I don't know if you've noticed, but in the scene,
this is like our admission. This is like sort of our show therapy.
What this is, right? Because there'll be a lot of drama students listening to this.
Yeah.
People who want to become actors.
Well, actually, question on Twitter was, any tips for actors wanting to get into the business and going to college?
Oh.
So is this your tip?
Well, I mean, I don't know if this is a tip. This is
that
just
was
a...
from Gabby Hoffman, by the way.
Right. Is she
Gabby.
Thinking of getting into...
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would say go around schools.
Just that?
Just that. Just turn up, doing a...
Doing a show,
just
presumably,
doing a show, like,
rather than just...
Turn up with a suitcase.
Yeah.
And then just do like a... Because they don't... Schools haven't got any money nowadays,
good
have
point,
they?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They'll be happy for...
For a bit of entertainment, a bit of a diversion.
More. Also, bus stops.
What, captive audience, you mean?
Yeah. Short play, 10 minutes, something like that.
Depends where you are, I suppose. In London, I think you'd have to be briefer than that.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Think about it, you know, especially at rush hour, you're talking every 2-3 minutes.
Yeah, I'm talking about... If
you're talking about rural, sort of a rural tour,
no,
rural
like
bus stop tour.
Two shows a day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Suppose so.
Matinee in an evening. No, I would say just outskirts, you know, Mill Hill.
Okay.
Somewhere like that.
Yeah. Did you hear that drill?
I forgot to tell you, Leslie, she does a bit of woodwork of an afternoon.
Does she?
Yeah, she does, yeah. She's had a circular saw.
Fitted as standard.
Yeah, every dressing room.
It's contractual.
And then, yeah.
Yeah.
That's her again. Yeah.
Blimey, what does she make?
Well, the members of the ensemble.
Yeah.
There she goes again. She can't help herself.
Very handy.
Yeah. She's got a belt sander as well.
Oh, nice.
And then members of the ensemble that have anything that's prone to splintering.
They can
bring
take
it
to
Leslie.
Leslie.
And she'll either trim it
She
down.
Gets the old DeWalt out. Is it DeWalt or DeWalt?
DeWalt. It's a W, but yeah.
But I presume it's...
DeWalt.
Yeah.
And she'll finish...
She's going for it. Blimey, Les.
She can't help herself. So what was my tip going to be? Oh, yeah, so what I've started doing in this scene, I don't know if you've noticed, just before the transference.
Yeah.
So there's a scene in the show where you're explaining that you have to do a brain transference. God, Les, I can't believe it. That's unbelievable. I think what it is that wardrobe in her dressing room is the same one from C.S. Lewis's Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe.
It's the access to Narnia.
And she's sick of Aslan coming out all the time.
Geez.
So she's building a...
I wouldn't mind Aslan coming out.
No, but
he's a
kidding?
Majestic chap.
He has all
It'd all be Tumnus who you'd get annoyed with.
Sliding around on that wood
on
floor.
On his ram's legs.
Yeah.
Get about.
But he catches his horns as he comes out the...
Maybe that's what she's fitting, a horn trap.
Yeah, she's fitting a cattle grid.
Have you entered into any more vocal warm-ups this week?
Oh, yes, yeah, I've been... I'll clear my throat just thinking about it.
Yeah.
This week, my vocal warm-up, I've hired a lollipop lady.
Where have you found her from?
She's on the road all the time.
Right.
Yeah, so what I do is I approach her like that, and then... But what she's doing is...
Does she know you're going to approach?
Yes, you see, we've discussed in advance, right? So what she does, she steps, she's sort of like, as if she's going to step into the road, and I think, oh, Like, so basically, she's letting the kids across.
Yeah.
Right? And then the kids have crossed, and she's about to step out of the road.
Yeah.
But then, is she going to step out of the road, or is she going to stay in the road?
Yeah.
So I find myself going, oh. See, so that's getting the
vocal jeopardy.
It's in the front of the voice.
Yeah.
Front
of the mouth, yeah.
Like that. And then, right, am I going to cross? Am I not going to cross? And then, this is the best bit, I get close and she gestures me across.
Mm.
And I'm like, oh, like that. So I'm like, thank you.
Yeah.
And then as I go to cross, kicks me in the balls.
From?
Just kicks me right.
A surprise attack?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've no idea. It's called. And I'm like that. Oh.
That's really at the back of the throat there.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, and then as the pain subsides,
Are you still in the road?
I'm lying in the road.
Oh.
I'm on the floor.
Yeah.
And as I'm down there, just at the point where I go, I'm fine, I'm about to stand up. She gets that long pole, right? And she puts
the lollipop,
The lollipop, yeah. She gets the end of it and she puts it right on me gluteus maximus, the buttock there, but like right on the, just on the edge of it.
Yeah.
And then she applies pressure like that, like a sort of an arse gondola. Gondolier.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she's like punching. She's like an arse gondolier.
She's using your behind as the wave, as if it was a
Venetian wave.
Yeah.
And then she just like that, and I go,
It's not unending pain. It's more just.
But she's applying the pain, and then she's on and off.
I see. Just opening up the throat.
And then that's.
Do you want to run through that? I imagine Gabby.
Yeah, she's going to need this when she goes to the lambs, please.
She might. What if she goes to the Paul and Quirk Academy?
Oh yeah, well exactly.
There you go.
Yeah.
So go for it then.
But in the Paul and Quirk Academy, all the students have to sing the
Birth of a Feather theme tune.
Yeah.
What was that?
What'll I when you? And they have to. They have a darkened room, and they have pools of light all around the room, and they have to.
Every morning, it's like the national anthem.
Exactly. So yeah. So sorry. I'll do the full vocal warm-up.
Yeah.
Boom! I'm ready to go.
Is that? And it's only once through, and then everything's. Warmed up?
Oh no, I do it every time the children cross.
Between sort of 3 o'clock and 4 o'clock, you're really.
Yeah, and it's handy because then I just come in for the show.
Ross, snow globe news.
Oh yes.
I was sat in my dressing room last night, was it? I think, it was last night.
Yeah.
Two members of the crew.
Yeah.
Scuttled past me.
No.
And they went. They sort of did a little cheeky laugh. Yeah. As they passed me in my room.
Right.
5 minutes later, they came back down past my room, both clutching two or three snow globes.
No.
It's snow globe theft.
Wow.
Obviously, there's no distinction between what we've done and what they've done.
Salvage. We've salvaged them.
But I guess what I'm saying is look at what we've started.
It's Musical of the Week.
Musical of the Week this week.
Yeah. What you got for me?
Well, here's the thing. See, I was thinking about what to do this week, and I was thinking about what we've already done. Hmm. It's very easy for me to start looking at shows that perhaps have been flops, because they're very often ones that on the face of it...
Come on, Les.
Les is still going.
Unbelievable.
She's on a jigsaw now.
Oh, my God, she can't help herself.
It's very easy to focus on the flops because they're ones that, on the face of it, are more ridiculous than not.
But often, the flops, the reason they're flops are because they have such incredibly convoluted plots.
Yeah. For instance, we did Lestat, which only ran for about 70 performances, I think, and that really was convoluted, wasn't it? And I thought, maybe that's a, you know, looking at Merlin as well, that, you know,
Although, weirdly, sorry to interrupt, but Nigel, our assistant director on the show, I don't know if you heard, he told me that he went to Vegas.
Yeah.
Las Vegas, Nevada.
Yeah.
At Nirvana. Yeah. He went into a heightened state. Nevada.
Yeah.
Oh, God. It's been a long week. It's that lollipop lady. She's gone right into the buttocks.
Which has affected your brain. Can't. As we all know.
He was in Reno. apparently, he's only gone and seen, before it was a West End hit, Copacabana.
Did he?
He certainly did.
What did he say about it?
He said that this was long before Gary Wilmot.
Oh, yeah, this is pre-Gary, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he went along and he watched it, and he went, this is very much a Las Vegas
show. Can see that, yeah.
Boom, next thing you know, it's in the
West End.
So, there you go. So, go on. So what?
Well,
what
so I was thinking, actually, we've done Lestat, we've done Merlin. It would be really easy just to keep on going with the flops.
Right.
What are the successful ones we've done? Starlight Express. That ran for 7,000 odd performances.
Still running in
Germany. Still going in Germany.
And by the way, I am seriously thinking about...
Yeah.
I don't know if they do a matinee on a Sunday.
Flying out and seeing it.
I've got 4 weeks left before I leave this show.
Yeah.
And I'm seriously considering getting on a plane.
Flight out
and
to...
going to see Starlight Express.
Yeah, that'd be worth it,
wouldn't it? Come on.
I wonder what that train's called in Germany.
Oh, yeah, it would all be in German as well, wouldn't it?
Well, no, I think it's in English.
Is it?
I'm not sure. We need to check that.
Certainly.
Milton Keynes wouldn't be there anymore, would it?
Das Milton Keynes. So, I mean, certainly if you have... any time off over the summer when I return,
I should take a trip.
I would suggest not only we take a trip, but I suggest we open it up to the podcast listeners.
That'd be good, wouldn't it? Field trip. Yeah. School outing.
Yeah.
Charter a plane.
Yeah. Everyone gets a snow globe. you could, you know.
What? Charter a plane?
From, we could go from Biggin Hill.
That's not too far from me.
Yeah.
That's very handy, because
Biggin Hill, private jet.
Germany.
Yeah. I'll be about...
quite a lot of money, though, wouldn't it?
About $8,000.
Yeah, that's too much.
Not if we split the costs.
Between?
10 of us. 1,200 quid. We could literally fly almost door to door.
I think that's too much money for a potential podcast special.
All right, go on then.
We'll
stop the clock on that.
Let's put a pin in it.
Just put a pin in it. Don't rule it out.
No, I won't rule it out.
Yeah,
right. And I was also thinking, so we've done Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Yeah.
We've done Elton John.
Yeah.
I was thinking of the classic writing teams or musical theatre writers that we haven't looked at yet.
Right.
And I was thinking Stephen Sondheim, but all of his shows sort of make sense.
Yeah.
They make beautiful, too much sense. Anyway, so I thought, who are the big guys who've written the shows?
Yeah,
and one of my personal favourites is lyricist, Alan J. Lerner.
Oh, right? Yeah.
You'll have heard of Lerner and Lowe.
Not really.
Oh, come on, Ross. They wrote My Fair Lady.
Oh, right. Okay, yes.
Camelot.
Who am I thinking of? The Shermans, that's who I was
thinking
of.
Oh, fair enough, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I was going through Alan Lerner's
back
catalogue, and there's one that's always... caught my eye.
Right.
I've never seen it. I've never seen the film adaptation of it.
Right.
I thought it might be worth looking at.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever seen the film. If I, in a funny sort of way, this is like Lost the Plot. If I was to say to you, what's the plot of the musical called On a Clear Day You Can See Forever?
Wow.
What would you say?
On a clear day, you can see forever. I would think, is it some sort of, is it like a sort of Derek Acora figure? Is it like a kind of a, Is it somebody who connects?
It's actually not far away from that.
Somebody who contacts the spirit world.
This is weird.
Is it somebody who is a clairvoyant or fortune teller?
Ross, you're almost clairvoyant yourself saying that.
Works in a northern seaside town.
That bit not.
Okay, well. Yeah. Okay. Right,
so, on a clear day you can see forever. The film adaptation very famously starred... oh, Christ, what's her face?
Very famously.
Barbara Streisand.
Oh, yeah, Streisand.
I've done that again.
I think it's important.
Streisand.
I think it's important.
Have we come across that in the podcast before?
What, us not being able to speak?
Me saying, me for up until last year, thinking that her name was Streisand.
No. Till last year?
Yeah.
Wow.
I've always thought, and this is not a joke, I've always thought her name was Barbara Streisand.
Wow.
Not Streisand, which it is.
Yeah.
I thought it was Streisand.
Wow. But there's loads of things like, loads of things that people do like that. Some people
have
think
you got one?
I'm trying to think. Yes, I kept calling Warsaw. Yeah. Warsaw. Yeah.
And what were you calling it?
Like Warsaw.
Like the place in the Midlands.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Did you think there was just one place?
I mean, I knew there were different places, but it's
you thought they were the same.
Perth, wasn't it?
I see what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Barbara was in the film adaptation along with Jack Nicholson.
Oh.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, so it's funny that you should go on about clairvoyance. Here's the plot.
Right.
Quirky Daisy Gamble sees her.
Sorry, there's a lot of words to take in.
I know, right?
Quirky Daisy Gamble.
So Daisy That's Gamble is the lead, the Barbara Streisand part, and she's quirky.
As soon as you said that, I thought that was a plot point. I thought it starts with a quirky Daisy Gamble. So basically, Jack Nicholson appears with a selection of summer flowers. And he says, if you guess which has got the longest stalk, I'll give you a pig. And he goes, this is a quirky Daisy Gamble.
Yeah.
So I guess the length of the stalk and he gives me a pig.
Good way to kick off a show, though.
Yeah. It seems an unusual thing to be offered. It's quirky, this Daisy Gamble. Yeah. But she's the name.
So Daisy Gamble, who is quirky, sees herself as an unremarkable person.
As opposed to Pauline Quirk. Yes, go on. So she
sees herself as an unremarkable person and has low self-esteem.
Oh.
Even though she can, one, make plants grow remarkably.
Yeah.
Two, predict when a telephone will ring or someone will drop in. And three, tell where to find an object that someone else is looking for.
Right.
But she doesn't think anything of that.
She doesn't.
I think you would, wouldn't you?
There'd be a point where, I mean...
Wouldn't you compare yourself with other people and go, can you do that?
You would, wouldn't you?
And I think unless
she can make plants grow just but only marginally faster.
It says so make plants grow remarkably.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
So she actively looks at a plant and can make it bloom and blossom.
Yeah.
I
don't know if it's because she talks to them or Prince Charles.
Yeah.
He does a bit of that.
He does, doesn't he?
He's can we call him an official friend of the podcast?
Yeah, definitely.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there you go. Daisy can do all of those things.
Right.
Her current problem, though,
is
her nasty smoking habit, which will interfere with the chances of her fiancé, Warren, getting a job.
Right.
Now, bearing in mind this was written in 65.
Where everyone's even barely smoked.
They did, didn't they?
Back then.
I can't think of a job where your wife's smoking habit would endanger your promotion or your being hired.
What if he was what if he was trying to become the chairman of the anti-smoking charity ASH?
That's about the only one, isn't it?
What if he was
a lung doctor?
Yeah,
maybe
head of lung cancer research international.
Yeah.
Could be. Or what if he, because back in the 60s, they didn't have the extensive flame retardant materials we have nowadays.
Right.
What if he was in a particular, a sofa shop?
Yeah.
That sold particularly flammable sofas.
Yeah.
See what I mean?
Okay.
Or he was the ambassador for acrylics.
Are they particularly flammable?
Oh, you drop a fag on anything acrylic, doesn't even catch fire.
I see what you mean. Twists and turns.
So,
and
yeah. So right. there's a few possibilities.
All right. Okay.
But
unfortunately, we don't know what it is.
Right.
Okay. Well, it doesn't say anyway. So she seeks help from a psychiatrist,
right.
Dr. Mark Bruckner.
Right.
Sounds like a handsome fella, doesn't he?
Yeah. You'd be playing him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who would you play?
I don't know. Is there anyone scuttling about?
There's no scuttlers at the moment. Oh, actually, no, I know who you. You're coming in later. You come on in Act Two.
Yeah, right. Okay, I'll be ready.
Wait for
that.
Him. He's brilliant.
Does he have some sort of strange physical deformity?
No, but I'm sure you could play him like that.
Right. Okay, I'll do that.
So she goes to see Dr. Mark Bruckner. He hypnotizes her, and she describes living a previous life in late 18th century England as Melinda Wells.
Ooh.
Who died in her late 20s from circumstances beyond her control. Free-spirited Melinda, this is her previous life person, was in love with a portrait painter.
Already I've got a bit confused because you're saying, so she's this character. So Barbara...
See, the reason why this appealed to me is because when we did Copacabana, you remember that there was Gary Wilmot who was playing Tony, or no, he was playing Steve.
Who became Tony.
It feels like a theme.
But the thing with this is, because of that, I'm now thinking Streisand is playing Gary Wilmot.
Yeah.
Right, sorry. So in our previous life,
she was in love with a portrait painter called Edward Moncrief.
All right.
Dr. Mark, in reality, keeps to himself what Daisy has revealed to him, and he tells her that she should not be ashamed of her ESP.
Ah,
well guessed, Ross.
Yes.
Well guessed. Have another snow globe. At their next session, Daisy, under hypnosis, relates scenes from the salacious London Hellraker's Club. Melinda and Edward, so this is in the past life, they eventually marry, but the painter's unfaithful to her, making love to his subjects.
Oh,
bloody painters.
Yeah.
Doesn't say whether he's an artist or whether he's a painter and decorator.
That's true. I mean, if he's a painter and decorator, I mean, he might
making love to his subjects.
he might be doing still life, you know, drawing bowls of fruit. In which case, I don't think that's classed as cheating, is it?
No, but you
just, you know, like a melon.
Unsettling, though, at the very least.
Certainly, and it would certainly put you off a fruit cocktail.
Mark, the psychiatrist, finds himself falling for Melinda. So this is Mark.
Oh, hang on, who's
so this
she?
Is the psychiatrist.
Right, he's falling for...
The previous life person.
Right, but with her body.
And becomes convinced that Daisy is really the reincarnation of Melinda.
Right.
Did you get me?
Yeah.
You following?
I am, yeah.
Melinda finally left Edward. This is in the past.
After he did that with the fruit.
Yeah. Dirty sod. And set sail for America, but the ship never reached Boston. Before Mark can save Melinda from the shipwreck, this is where I don't...
Right,
this is
on.
Where the layers really mess with my mind.
I'm loving it. Where's Gary Wilmot when we need him? So...
Before Mark can save Melinda from shipwreck, Daisy wakes up. So is that suggesting that he thinks he's got the ability to, as a psychiatrist from the future, prevent something happening in the past?
Even though she's dead anyway.
Yeah.
But then she was reincarnated. So if he saves her, she doesn't get she doesn't die, therefore doesn't end up in
his office
in Streisand.
Anyway, that's the end of Act One.
What's the smoking got to do with it?
Don't know.
No, there's been no mention of the smoking.
No,
is there going to be some clever callback later?
I don't think so. I think she goes to him to stop smoking.
Right.
Maybe.
Okay. And did.
But the ESP is just like something else that she's
it's just
got.
A side line. But does
what's wrong? Well, I am completely clairvoyant, but I smoke. I don't think it's even a lot. Like in the film version, I think they say she smokes about 5 cigarettes a day.
Right. But there's no, like...
There's no mention of...
Wouldn't the tobacco stunt the growth of the plants anyway?
Anyway, so
right.
She wakes up, end of act one.
Right. Gee, is that the end? That seems like a pretty weak end of act one. He's literally, curtain. The song, the big closing song in act one.
It's called, hang on a minute, let me find out what it's called. End of act one. Oh, it's just called Melinda.
Linda.
Hey, listen to this.
Go on.
Oh, I think my favourite... Well, there's a couple of crackers. So in act one, we've got the overture.
Yeah.
Hurry, it's lovely up here, Daisy Gamble.
Brilliant.
Ring out the bells. Samuel Wells, Mrs. Wells, Sir Hubert Insdale and servants. There's been no mention of them.
Although, what was it called? Hurry up, it's lovely up
here. Hurry, it's lovely up here.
Hurry, it's lovely up here. What I want to do...
Mm.
I've got my ukulele over there in the corner.
Yeah.
I'm going to get the music for that. I'm going to learn it on the ukulele.
Yeah.
And I'm going to deliberately position myself in high places.
You could, you know, there's the balcony of the bar in the theatre. Yes. You know, the dress circle bar.
Yeah, yeah, passers by.
You could just put yourself, which literally faces out onto Charing Cross Road, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You could.
Hurry, it's lovely up here.
You could be singing that.
I could be on the shard, you know, the observation deck of the shard.
Yeah.
I could do that.
Yeah.
The top deck of the Cutty Sark.
Crow's Nest.
Yeah. Open top bus around London.
Biplane, an open biplane.
Yeah.
Couldn't get much higher than that.
Yeah. Nelson's Column, On His Shoulders.
Then there's the title song of the show.
Yeah.
This next one, though, I think sounds quite appealing.
Go on.
On the SS Bernard Cohen.
Wow. Daisy,
Muriel Bunsen, James Preston and Millard Cross.
On the SS Bernard Cohen.
Mm.
I'm guessing the lyrics are something like, when the whiskey and rum are flowing, you're aboard the
Bernard Cohen.
You're on board Bernard Cohen.
Then there's At the Hellrakers.
Our happiness, it is showing. Bernard Cohen.
Oh, our look, there's faces, Jim Bowen.
They are flowing. Aboard the Bernard Cohen. Hey, there's no need for rowing. Aboard the Bernard Cohen.
This next
we're sick
one.
We're sick and our dinner we're throwing. Aboard the Bernard Cohen.
Then there's At the Hellrakers.
Our medals on our uniform we're showing. I can just see it now. There's so many of them, you could do it in a Gilbert and Sullivan... Sorry, go
no,
on.
Listen to this, though.
Go on.
The song At Hellrakers is a ballet.
What?
I wasn't expecting that.
No.
Then there's Don't Tamper With My Sister. Sung by Edward Moncrief, Sir Hubert and the Ensemble.
Amazing. Don't Tamper With My Sister.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but that is now the greatest song I've ever heard. And all I'm saying is, luckily, I've got my ukulele over there.
Yeah.
And I have an older sister.
I'm going to get you the songbook.
Amazing.
Okay, so those are the ones in act one. Act two. You ready? Dr. Mark, the psychiatrist.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Reports on the case to his fellow psychiatrists who ridicule his findings.
Of course.
This is, I think, your part coming up.
Here it comes. Oh, here we go. Well, let me guess. He's a one-legged Brazilian or something.
No, it's quite high status.
Go on.
Greek shipping magnate.
Yes! That's me.
Themistocles Kriakos.
That's me. Put me down. Sign me up.
Greek shipping magnate Themistocles Kriakos. Learns of Mark's belief in reincarnation.
Brilliant.
And offers to finance a study of the events of Melinda's life in exchange for Mark's help in discovering who he will be in his next life, which will allow him to leave his fortune to his future self.
Yes.
That is a long sentence. There's a lot happening there.
He wants... Hang on. Read that again.
Oh, that's hard, isn't it?
So he wants to leave his money
to his future self.
Future self.
So he offers to finance a study of the events of Melinda's life, which is Daisy's past life.
Yes.
In exchange for Mark's help in discovering who he will be in his next life.
Yeah, I've got you.
Christ. Yeah. Imagine, do you want to know what the song's called, though?
Imagine if his future self, he was Gary Wilmot.
That would be too perfect for words.
Yeah. Go on, what's the song called?
When I'm Being Born Again.
When I'm Being Born Again.
Themistocles Kriakos.
Brilliant. Oh. Just if on his own, there's no ensemble help.
If by the end of your song and dance career, that credit is not on there,
oh my God,
I will be so disappointed.
That's what, yeah. I mean, you know, I wish to continue my musical theatre career, and that is definitely on the list. Do you reckon we could just, because, you know, Summer Stralin, who's in the show,
yeah,
she could play the Strisland part, couldn't
Daisy,
she?
Daisy, yeah.
You could be the Doctor.
Yeah.
Are you going to be the Doctor? Who was the other one that you...
The artist.
Oh, the artist.
Edward, yeah. Moncrief.
We could... you be the Doctor.
You've got to be Themistocles. 100%.
We just transpose the whole cast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So...
Oh, no, you know, Nick should be the... He should be the artist. Nick Greensheet.
Yeah.
How tall is he? 6'7"?
Yeah.
Imagine that.
Sleeping with the fruit bowl.
We get Perry could be the fruit bowl.
Good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what we'll do. Yeah. Just like Carmen Miranda, you could have it on his head and he's dancing around and all 6'7" of Nick chasing after him, bounce around his ankles.
My word, that's a thought.
This is... Go on.
Hang on. Right. Okay. Daisy accidentally discovers that she is the Melinda at the centre of the growing controversy. So she hasn't had any idea up until now because she's always been under hypnosis.
Of course, yeah.
And she discovers that Dr. Mark prefers Melinda to herself.
Oh.
That's quite a thing to take on board, isn't it?
Yeah.
Someone prefers the you from a past life to you.
Yeah.
How would you deal with that?
Well, presumably you're the same... You're the same person. He just, but back in merry old England, she probably had some sort of plunging neckline. What that says to me is he's a filthy creep. Just wants to look down her blouse.
Yeah. Dirty. In her angry confrontation with the psychiatrist about the matter, she tells him that she is, and I quote, through being a go-between for you and your dream girl, you're not going to go on using my head for a motel.
Oh.
Harsh, but yeah. Fair, I think.
There's an element of being John Malkovich about this.
There is, isn't there? This, you know, it's layered, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's not much left, actually, of the show. Daisy goes to the airport, ready to return home. Her ESP powers warn her that the plane on which she plans to travel will crash.
Right.
She realises at last how special she is. That's the journey that she's gone on.
Let me guess. But she takes some beans... And makes the beanstalk grow incredibly high, super fast, to catch the plane.
That's what she should have done.
They all climb down the beanstalk. No, that's not what happens.
I think what she does is not go on the plane.
Let it crash anyway. Doesn't warn her.
Yeah.
Selfish girl.
She leaves her starchy fiancé. What's his name? Warren.
Yeah.
The smoking guy. The non-smoking guy.
Can't get the job because of the... Yeah.
And she and Mark unite to explore their extraordinary future.
Wow.
Well, I wasn't expecting that.
Imagine if...
But surely she'd have been able to see that happening.
You think, wouldn't you? But hang on a sec. But then the people who die in the plane crash...
Yeah.
Do they become somebody new? And who does Krakatoa...
Themistocles Kriakos?
Yeah. What?
I'm not sure we ever find out.
Do we find out who he becomes?
Doesn't... Well, you know, they changed it for the film...
Oh.
So maybe in the film version, you find out who he becomes. Actually, in the film version, which I quite like, hold on a minute, hold the line, caller. They changed a few bits and bobs. So Nelson Riddle served as the musical supervisor. That was his last. Oh no, Cecil Beaton designed the period costumes.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was his last job. Anyway, they changed quite a few things in the film version. To the point where her previous person was called Lady Melinda Winifred Wayne Tentrees. That's a mouthful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Oh, hang on a minute. When she returns for a final meeting with him, this is in the film version, she mentions 14 additional lives.
Oh, God. Each one with a song?
Maybe. Including her forthcoming birth as Laura and subsequent marriage to the therapist in the year 2038.
Blimey.
So maybe if we're around long enough,
yeah,
we might be able to see the musical come true.
Yeah.
Does that work?
Yeah,
I'm getting confused with what's reality now.
Yeah, no.
What have we learned, Ross?
I think what we've learned there is that even though you might have a special gift for something.
Clairvoyancy, ESP.
Sometimes it's they're not necessarily the most important part of who you are.
Oh. That's
see
nice.
What I mean?
Yeah.
See what I mean?
What do you think is the most important part of Daisy then?
I think it's the fact she's got a strong enough will to stand up to somebody who's trying to get off with her
previous incarnation.
Yeah. I think it's very much a feminist. It's a feminist piece.
Fable.
Yeah. It's about relationships, isn't it? It's about. About a man needs to love you for who you are. No, a man needs to love you for who you are, not the person that you used to be in a previous life.
Right.
And not because you can make plants grow slightly quicker.
Well summarised.
Yeah. When we do our Michael Ball, Alfie Ball style ITV Christmas special.
Yeah.
In the coming years,
yeah,
I think we should definitely do a duet of Don't Tamper With My Sister.
Agreed.
Yeah, with the original Beverly Sisters.
Thanks very much for listening.
Goodbye. What's the prayer that we cry for?